Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Episode number 3 for the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Yes.
Part 3 of 3.
Of QAS. That I missed.
That you missed.
What episode's this?
3.
No, what episode?
Oh, 474.
474.
Episode 474 of Paddling Adventures Radio. Dun, dun, dun. So this is sort of just a finish up thing. Mind you, so when I was sitting there chit-chatting with my neighbors at the booth, at the show, they are Trapper Haskins.
Okay.
Was the guy I chit-chatted with. And they're the ones that he built the yawl, the boat, the Y-A-W-L yawl.
It's a yawl, y'all.
It's a ball, the boat. They built that, and they paddled the Mississippi. So it was nice to talk to somebody that's actually paddled the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
or I guess rode it in this case. And there is they did have a sail on it as well,
yes.
They could put out. But they did this in different sections, and you'll hear in the interview about that. But it, you know what? It's a pretty cool trip by the sounds of it, especially how this is sort of a unique trip on how it all worked out from start to finish.
But seems like a very slow trip because they started without kids and ended up with kids.
Right?
That's a very slow trip.
Took a long time. In fact, the kids were 11 by the time they finished. You'll hear all about that in the interview with Trapper. So without much ado, do you have anything exciting to talk about beforehand?
I do not.
All right. So just to get right into it, Trapper Haskins talking about rowing the Mississippi. He's got a book out that he was publishing, Crooked Old River, Rowing Toward Redemption on the Mississippi River. So he did that chat when he was at Quiet Adventure Symposium. So he sat down with me and chatted about rowing down the Mississippi River and everything that he saw there, they saw along the way. So here it is. So joining us is Trapper Haskins. How you doing, Trapper?
I'm doing great. Doing fantastic.
So you're enjoying the show so far?
I have not had a chance to walk around and check things out. Been, well, like everybody here before hours, busy setting things up, but I'm looking forward to getting a look around at all the stuff.
Yeah. Is this your first year here?
It is, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you haven't checked out the rabbit show yet?
No, but I can smell them.
Oh,
I can smell them.
All day long.
Yeah. I should say I did participate in the QAS in 2021, I think. Was that the online? That one was
the
online.
The online one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I had a prepared video. That was the first time I had any participation with it. But we live in Tennessee. This is the first time I've actually traveled up to the symposium.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So why are you here this year?
Why am I here? I have a book called Crooked Old River that published last spring about a voyage down the Mississippi River in a replica of a Mississippi River yawl, which is the type of boat that they would have used on the river back in the 1800s and up until about 1940. These were like the John boat of the day. They were just, you know, it was a utility boat that was used by the paddle wheelers, used by fishermen and trappers. And I was a boat builder in Maine back in my, I would say my youth, but when my wife and I were newlyweds. And got a little homesick after experiencing the winter in Maine, and had found the plans to this Mississippi River yawl in a book. And I told my wife, I want to build that boat because that reminds me of home, and take it down the Mississippi River.
That's cool.
And so we ended up doing that in 2002, but we didn't go the whole way down. We started at the headwaters in a canoe because our 500-pound boat with 9-foot oars does not fit over the rocks there at Lake Itasca. So we canoed the headwaters, but from St. Paul down to New Orleans, we rowed and we sailed because these boats are outfitted with a sail. So my wife sewed a 72-square-foot sail that goes on this boat. But we made it down to New Orleans, and for a variety of reasons, one of them being talking to one of the ship captains or the pilots, excuse me, that warned us about the shipping getting thicker and thicker as you go down the river, and a couple of other reasons. We just decided to call it a day in New Orleans. So we would have been about 3 months on the river at that point.
That's a long time to be on the river.
It is, and the first few days were, you know, like any camping trip, it's like the first couple of days you're not sleeping well.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the ground. But by the time we got, you know, into the rowboat in St. Paul, we sort of felt like old hands at it. But we got to New Orleans and walked away and sort of decided that we had proven to ourselves what we set out to do. And then fast forward 15, 16 years later, I was working an office job at a architecture firm in Nashville.
Right.
And coming into midlife, had two kids at this point, and just was having a really hard time with it, just because I've always been, but before working at the architecture firm, I had been a trim carpenter, furniture builder, and sort of viewed myself as a creative sort of person, and here I was working an office job.
Right.
Had a really hard time with it, and that boat that we had taken down the river, the replica yawl, just sat rotting in our backyard for all those years. And so in 2017, my kids helped me rebuild the boat, replace all the rotten planks and stuff. And we as a family of four went down to New Orleans exactly where we took the boat out of the river and put the rebuilt boat back in the river to do the last 100 miles as a family of four.
That's cool.
And that was in 2018 that we finished the trip. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? That's the thing is, people say, oh, I'm going to do this trip. And then if they don't finish, they look at it, well, that's a failure. I didn't finish the trip.
Right.
But just because you didn't finish doesn't mean you can't go back later.
100%.
And
yeah.
finish, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's that mentality, even with canoe trippers and stuff like that. Well, I'm going to go up and do, I mean, up north, like the Nahanni or something like that. But something happens and you got to pull out.
Right.
Oh, it didn't turn out. It didn't. It doesn't mean you can't go back.
Yeah, it's a failure, or it's got an asterisk by it, or
right?
something like that.
Right?
Yeah.
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 But and be able to take your kids all those years later and do that last
100%. And looking back on it now, after doing that in 2018, finishing the trip, looking back on the whole experience, the whole voyage, I don't think I would change the way that it went. Like, if you could tell me I could go back and do Source to Sea in 2002 when we started it, mm-hmm. or have this sort of 16-year break and go back with my kids and finish it, I would definitely
do it.
The way that it sort of turned out. The arc of the story feels,
but you know what?
Feels more whole.
It's a unique take on the trip, too, because everybody, I'm doing Source to Sea, Source to Sea, Source to Sea.
Correct.
How many times do you see that? Like, oh, well, I'm doing Source to Sea of all the Mississippi or all the this river or all the that river.
Right.
Yeah, in one go. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing that nowadays, but you've got a bit twist on it because of that 16-year break, right?
Right. And that's, yeah. And my kids, they would have been 9 and 11 when we went out on the river there.
Right.
And we had some, I don't know if run-in is the right word. We had an encounter with the Plaquemines Parish Sheriff's Office. We had an encounter with the United States Coast Guard.
Really?
They saw the kids in the boat as a huge risk, and they did not want us out there. And so we got a visit from both of them. Neither one of us forced us off the river, but there were some words exchanged, which I write about in the book. But I'm hopeful that I didn't traumatize my kids from going out on rivers after that. But they were they have seen a part of the country that 99.9% of children will never, ever see.
Right?
And that is the lower reaches of the Mississippi, not from the road, not even from the levee, but from mid-channel, and
it's a completely different view from the seat of a boat.
It
doesn't
is.
Matter where you are. You can follow a river every day, but the minute you get on that river,
yes,
total different
yes.
view, total different experience.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I've been harping on lately is you got to get them out there.
You do. Yeah.
Get out there, get with nature, get away from the hustle and bustle of this is what you've got to do, this
right.
is how you have to do things.
Right.
Get on the river, go paddle, even if it's just for a day.
Yep, I agree. And even if you're in the hustle and bustle of a city, seeing that city from the middle of the river
yeah.
is amazing. So I grew up in Memphis, And when I was in college, I sort of fell in love with the Mississippi. I loved boats and stuff, but I'd never really been on the river.
Right.
And I got a job on one of those tourist paddle boats that goes out on the, you know, sightseeing.
We've been on one of those.
So that was my first time to see my hometown from the middle of the Mississippi.
Right.
And that was really where... that was really where it sort of got into my blood, was being on the river. You know, the hustle and bustle of the city is a quarter of a mile away from you, but you're on this, you know, you're on this wedding cake looking steamboat going up the river, and it's just, you know, so whether you're in a canoe or you're on a steamboat, seeing the world from the middle of the river is, it's just such a fascinating viewpoint.
Yeah, and with kids, we always say, you know, we're the last of the be in when the streetlights come on generation.
We are.
Right?
Yeah.
And even our kids, like we've had them in canoes since they were little.
Good.
I know people that have been on canoe trips breastfeeding.
I love it.
Right?
I love it. Yeah.
So, and it's the outside world that is not into canoe tripping and stuff like that. They have a total different... It's almost like they think it's abuse to take kids, young kids, on trips like that.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's... Well, it's not. They're getting used to nature already. So...
Yes, that's exactly how I felt when the Plaquemines Parish Sheriff's Office came up in there. They have a boat, you know, they have a sheriff's boat down there. And one of the deputies was on the deck yelling at us, you've got to get these kids off the river. He wasn't concerned with my wife and I or the boat. Nothing we were doing was illegal, but the fact that we had children on the river really stuck in his craw. But our boat only drew 4 inches of water, and so we were really skirting the side of the river the whole time we had the kids in the boat. But the shipping is a little too heavy down there, and the boats are moving a little too quickly, especially when there's a rise in the river, for me to feel comfortable having the kids in this boat mid-channel, which it's only powered by oar and sail. Of course, we weren't sailing down there, but you know, we're not gonna outrow a 1,000-foot oil tanker.
Well, not with an attitude like that, you're not. How maneuverable is the yawl?
Yeah, it's very maneuverable. It's got a lot of rocker or a lot of like sweep to the bottom of it. So.
Right.
And there is a there's a swing keel that you can swing down, and she'll track really well when she's under or sailing. But you can raise the center board up, and she's only drawing 4 inches of water. And with 9-foot oars, you know, I can swing that thing 360 degrees in no time. But not being familiar with barges or really ocean-going ships.
Right.
I wasn't really educated on like the closing speed of those boats or what. You know, I just tried to stay out of their way. I figured that.
You know what? That's exactly. We paddle downtown Toronto.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So and you see all the sky, and we've done it at night and stuff like that. So
nice.
I mean, yeah, seeing it from a kayak or a canoe.
Yep.
You know, is just like phenomenal.
Oh.
But they got the ferries going back and forth and whatnot, and you're just like, okay. Yeah, I'm just going to wait here till it passes.
Yes,
and then I'll cross, right?
Yeah, because
I can paddle fast, but probably not that fast.
No, the closing speed of a motorized craft, it doesn't matter what it is, it can be deceivingly quick. But you guys are paddling the
Lake Ontario, right in the harbor of Toronto.
Right in the harbor of Toronto. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that where you guys are based out of?
Just east of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, so a couple of years ago, we did the 5 Great Lakes in a day.
Mm.
So we started at midnight in Toronto Harbor on Lake Ontario.
Okay.
And then we paddled there for about a half hour or so. Then we put the canoe on the truck.
Okay.
Boogied over to Lake Erie, put in, paddled around for a while, got back out. We did all the Great Lakes, and we ended up at the end of the day up in Superior.
In one day?
In one day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things that happen in my brain, I take no accounting for.
Yeah.
But it was a great, great trip. We had a blast. Definitely do it again. But yeah, you see these boats out there, and you're thinking, even fishing boats, like they don't really, not thinking people are going to be out there sort of deal, and they're just, okay, we're going out into the water, and they just start hammering out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not paying attention to where they are.
Because they're not paying attention
to
where you are.
They're not paying attention to you.
No, not at all.
And you're definitely not beating them. And depending on the time of day, how the light hits, whatever,
yeah.
You're thinking, I can That's still far away, and they're a bit closer than actually think.
100%. Yeah. Right? What did your kids think of the? Did they go on the Great Lakes and?
Oh no, that was just me and Derek when did that.
Oh,
one.
Nice.
But
nice,
they were all okay. Looking like, dude, there's. I don't know if there's something wrong with you or if I'm jealous.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, if my kids did that, I think they would probably appreciate the paddling aspect, but they would be bored to tears sitting in the car going from one to the other.
That was, yeah, we had it at one point. And like I said, usually nobody drives my truck.
Uh-huh.
But at one point I pulled over, filled up with gas. Derek, you're driving for a while, dude.
Yeah,
I need to snooze.
That's a long way. That's a long way.
Well, because then when you get to the top, you've already got to come home now.
That's right. That's right.
Right? So it's over 24 hours. And you're just like...
Yeah. So for the next time you do this trip, you might drive out to Thunder Bay or something and go the other way. So you end at home and you don't have to drive home after... paddling on all the lakes and putting all those miles on the truck, you'll already be at home.
Okay, I'm here now. And just go to bed now. Leave everything all unpacked tomorrow.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've had the kids on different trips, and growing up, I would take my kids out like separately. And this is for anybody listening with kids that likes to get out paddling, and your wife doesn't want you to go. Say, mm-hmm. Well, I'm taking this child out on a canoe trip, and then I'm going to take this one out on a separate canoe trip because that way. I get son dad time, daughter dad time.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then I get to go on my regular trips with my buddies. So I'm just getting a couple other trips out of the deal.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
For more pro tips. but we, you know, like I say, my daughter's into the art, and I'd pack her portable easel and art kit and stuff.
Okay.
And we'd do these canoe trips, and then she'd set up on the beach and paint, you know, that sort of stuff.
And how old is she?
She's 27 now, but she was just a teenager when we started doing
that. Perfect.
Right? My son as well, like, we'd go out and we'd go fishing and all that sort of, and then as he got older, it became a bit of a, oh, don't worry, Dad, I'll put this pack on, I'll put this one on the front, and I'll carry this, and I'll carry that.
Yeah.
You know, I can carry more than you. All right, let's see if you can do this, my boy. I'll just take this last little day pack, put it on, and oh, look at you go.
You played the old man card. Like,
right? I have no problems with that.
No, I don't either.
As long as the old brain keeps going.
Yes,
right?
Yes. My son is, he's now a freshman in high school, and he is continually trying to test his strength against mine to prove that he's stronger.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to let him know that he is, but he's a baseball player. He spends, every day in the weight room, and he's getting to the point.
Is he doing the deadlifting and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. My son's arms are like this now.
It's,
and you know the old, I brought you into this world, I can take you out?
Yeah.
I brought you into this world... There's the door.
Yeah, because I used to tell him, I said, I brought you into this world, I can take you out and make another one that looks just like you.
Right?
But now, I'm not, I wouldn't tell him he could take me, but he could probably take me.
He could probably take me, right? Yeah.
But if and when we do go canoeing, which is, it's getting rarer these days, his baseball schedule is pretty intense, but when we do go out, I have no problem letting him letting him do the heavy lifting.
And that's why, like, my son was in hockey.
Mm.
So we were all winter. We were all like Canada, the States on tournaments and stuff like that. Yeah. And but then come summer, he would maybe have some summer league or something like that, or you know, on a weeknight or something.
Yeah.
So that left our weekends free. So we didn't really get into. See, you got to have them in a winter sport.
Yeah, he's the summer when he's doing this travel. I don't know how many listeners have children in travel ball, but. It will eat your entire summer up. Like every weekend is basically a family vacation to another ballpark.
Yeah, your daughter doesn't.
She, you know, we tried. She tried everything from track to tennis to softball. She's my little tender artist, and she just doesn't have a killer instinct. There's not a competitive bone in her body. If she was on the field with somebody else, she wants everybody to win and have fun, which is I love it. And I think
we have the same family.
Yeah.
We did the volleyball. We did the figure skating.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to be over here doing my paintings.
Yep.
And the clarinet.
Yep.
Go do what you guys do.
That is 100% how our family is. Yeah. I got an athlete, got an artist, but they both have that experience or have had that experience when they were kids of getting on the river. And one of the other things I did with my daughter was, in fact, that's the thing that we recorded the video of for QAS 2021 was my daughter and I got a canoe and mounted one of those Google Street View cameras.
Right.
Uh-huh. And we did 115 miles, which is virtually all the miles, of the Harpeth River, which runs through Middle Tennessee and dumps into the Cumberland River. And I have tens of thousands of panoramic photos of the Harpeth River. I have had trouble finding somebody technologically adept enough to upload those, because that's not my strong suit. So those,
right,
those photos are still sitting on my computer. But at the time, we were getting up early, going out on the river. We'd have to come home every night because I had to download all these photos and empty the cards. But I remember at the time, Piper was probably 13 or so, and I could hear her sort of crying in the bow seat some of the times, because, you know, paddling is hard. We did it,
yeah,
all day, every day for a little over a week, and I just kept thinking to myself, man, I hope I'm instilling something other than a disdain for rivers in,
yeah,
her. And now she's 17, and she actually said about a month ago to me, she said, you know, I'm really, really proud, because I can tell people I've done the entire Harpeth River.
Right.
And,
well, yeah, see, we know when I die, there's going to be a fight over my boats.
Uh-huh.
Who's getting the kayaks? Who's getting the canoes? And I'm at the point where I'm just going to sell them. But, no, we've instilled that getting outside, getting into nature, whether you're paddling or hiking or whatever, in,
yeah,
our kids.
Yeah.
And they both enjoy doing it. They still, to
they
this
still
day,
do
enjoy
it.
Doing it. My daughter's over in Japan.
Oh.
And next thing you know, we're getting this Facebook thing, and she's at the top of a mountain. You know, she's getting a, and I'm one of those people that get up at 3 a.m. so I can be well out of town and on my way,
yeah,
on a canoe trip before everybody else is up and the sun rises, right? And she's doing that now. So, yeah, you get this thing going on, and you can instill it in your kids, and then they just,
right,
you know,
right,
keep going on. And who's to say one of your kids don't do the whole...
It would be awesome. I can see my son doing it if somebody gave him a jet ski to do it on, because he has told me he does not like canoeing at this point. And I'm like, why don't you like it, bud? And he said, it's just too damn slow. And he said, because now...
That's the point.
And that's the point. It's slow. You get to take things in. It's sort of like... And I've told him, there are people out there, hockey fans, I'm sure, that will tell us that baseball is boring, it's too slow. And I said, that's the point. It's slow.
Have you ever watched golf? Baseball's fast compared
but he
to golf.
Likes, he has told me, he said he went out on a friend of his, their family has a speedboat, and he went out on one of those. And I think it sort of ruined him, at least,
yeah,
at least for now. He's 16 years old, 15 years old, so he's at that
It'll
point
change.
Where, yeah, he wants, yeah, things that go fast, and,
yeah,
and hopefully when he gets a few, before he gets a few gray hairs, he'll
be back on the river.
He'll be back on the river, yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a future down the road dad and son trip, or dad and daughter trip.
I would love nothing,
you know,
more, yeah.
Or you sit in the princess seat, and you have son and daughter.
I've never heard it called that, the princess seat.
Oh, yeah, the princess seat. The one that sits in the middle?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
When doesn't do any paddling?
Yes, when my son was really, really young, we would put him in the princess seat, and then my daughter was in the bow seat, and I would be in the stern.
Right.
But I've never heard it called that. I love
yeah,
that. That's, I'm taking that one with me.
So anybody that's doing the Mississippi or thinking of it, would you recommend doing it?
Oh, it's life-changing.
Yeah. Is there anything specific that you would say make sure you study up on first, besides the
remote
traffic?
I'll tell you one thing. So when we did this in 2002, I was sort of a Luddite at the time. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have an email address. I wasn't online. You know, there's a group on Facebook called, I think it's called Mississippi River Paddlers, and it's become a chat room for people that are either doing the trip, have done the trip, are assisting people doing the trip. Anyways, one of the things that we sort of got lucky in that we just showed up at Lake Itasca with a canoe, jumped in the newborn Mississippi and went for it.
Right.
But after following that page for years, I've discovered that there are years when the water's just too low and you have to go a ways down river before you can put in. So if I was going to do it again, I would absolutely check the water levels at the headwaters or in the headwaters region specifically, because there are, which is a surprise to me, I didn't know this, but there are years when it's too low to actually get a canoe in there and do those early miles. And like I said, we just got lucky in that we showed up in July of 2002, put the canoe in the water, and went for it. But there have been people that have had to either delay their trip or put in further downriver. And then if you're the type of person that's a completist like me, and you're going to feel like your trip is going to have an asterisk if you don't start at the very start of it, you're going to want to know the water levels before you get up
head on in there.
Yeah. The other thing that I would say that anybody that's camped on a river knows that the water fluctuates, and if you're on a flat beach. And it doesn't matter if it's been sunny and rainless where you are for the last week. You know, that water's coming in from several hundred miles away, and all of a sudden your camp is flooded. So it's one of the tricks that we learned on the river, which, again, I'm sure your listeners do this. But it took me a couple of instances of the river rising, which is we'd set up our camp and then put a stick in the water, in the sand right there where you can just see which way is the water level going here.
Well, and see, that's a lot of the tripping we dove. I mean, you don't need to worry about that.
Okay.
But when you start heading north towards like Hudson's Bay and stuff like that, you're saying, is it affecting, the tide's affecting this down this far yet? And that's what you do. You just throw the stick in there, and then you're sitting there going, nope, not yet. And then every night, you just put a stick at your next site, and then eventually you're just, oh, wait a minute.
And that's,
little bit of a rise.
And that's the tides.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
So then you're just thinking, okay, that's, because you don't, like you say, you don't want to put your tent somewhere.
Right.
And then in the middle of the night, why is there a little bit of water
it's
here?
It's damp in here. What's, I don't remember wetting the bed.
So it looks like there seems to be a lot more people doing the Mississippi now, and I don't think it's from everything I've seen a river that you can totally be prepared for every little thing.
No, you can't, and I think trying to be is going to spoil some of the fun
right
in it, the adventure in it. It's still a relatively rare thing. I think somebody told me last year, which was shocking to me, that there are more people that climb Mount Everest every year than descending the Mississippi. So,
have you seen pictures of Everest lately?
I have not.
The lineups getting to the top, ridiculous.
Is it quite the queue trying to get up there?
Okay. It's like the lineup to Santa Claus at Christmas in the mall.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah.
Well, the Mississippi is nowhere near that.
So you got a good chance of getting down there. There's a giant line of boats and canoes.
Yeah,
and kayaks.
I would say during that trip, we ran into a pair in a canoe. They started in Yankton, South Dakota, came down the Missouri, and they were doing the Mississippi. We met a guy from Cincinnati who worked for the Postal Service, and he was coming down the Ohio and Mississippi. And then we met a trio in a canoe. That we met them in Caruthersville, Missouri, and actually, I write about this in the book, but there was a night where Mandy and I were setting up our camp, and we had sort of he was a drunken fisherman in Mississippi, and we had a gun pulled on us, and the trio was probably a couple miles behind us, and I was able to kind of stall things long enough for them to roll up, but we decided that night that we were going to do the rest of the river together. And so the five of us, I guess, went down to New Orleans sort of as a pack.
Right.
Because, a drunken fisherman with a loaded .22 in Mississippi was a little
You can only prepare for so much.
You cannot prepare for everything. And, I think probably my wife wearing bikini bottoms did not help the situation, I think if we'd been two burly dudes, that guy just wouldn't have even bothered. But like I said, we were in our 20s, and my wife was wearing bikini bottoms.
Unless, of course, you were wearing the bikini bottom, then you may have thought differently at that point.
But he was very interested in hanging around us.
Right.
We were not interested in hanging around him.
Right.
But when a firearm comes out and all you have is a knife, it's a little...
Everything changes.
A little unsettling. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say, and anybody who's done the river will tell you this, that the overwhelming kindness of the strangers that you meet mm-hmm. really makes the trip. That dude in Mississippi was the only unsavory person that we met. I mean, we were given the keys to people's Jeeps to go on grocery runs. We were given the guest bedrooms in people's houses sometimes. You know, we were given a sweatshirt in Minnesota when it was a little colder than I anticipated it being in the summertime.
Right.
But the unbelievable kindness of strangers, when they hear what you're doing, and I think that I think a lot of people get that way because I feel like we all sort of have that adventurous sort of seed in us somewhere.
Yep.
And people, for whatever reason, aren't able to act on that. Maybe that just their situation in life, you know, right now. So when people hear what you're doing, they can sort of see themselves doing that.
They become a part of that by helping you out, right?
They become
a little piece of
yes
of that adventure.
Yeah, they're invested in it, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, everybody wants to be Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, right?
Yes. And growing up in Memphis, I would go to this. There's a park in Memphis called Mud Island River Park, and there is a replica of the Lower Mississippi River, and it's a it's cast in concrete, and it's got all the curves, and the topography of the bottom of the river is cast into the concrete, and they flush, I don't know, 500,000 gallons of water or something a day through this thing, and it courses over 52 acres. And when I was a kid in Memphis, we would go there, and my sister and I would eat popsicles from the snack stand and then throw our popsicle sticks in this quote-unquote river, this model river, and follow it all the way down. And so you talk about Huckleberry Finn. Like, even then as a kid, it was just like I imagined myself on the popsicle stick sort of coursing around all these curves and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, as a kid, I could see myself as Huckleberry Finn. Gray-haired people that we met on the banks of the river could see themselves as Huckleberry Finn, and they wanted to help. It's like everybody who's heard that story, I don't know, I just think it's a very... I would say American thing, but I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think it's just, I think it's a human thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we know people that have paddled across Canada, and that's exactly what they say. Like, you'll go somewhere, somebody, where are you going? I'm paddling to Nova Scotia from, where'd you start? BC. You're paddling all the way across?
Yeah.
And then they, all of a sudden, totally different person you're dealing with. And they're, hey, let me get you a coffee and a donut and tell me a little bit about your adventure.
Yes.
And let me buy you a sub sandwich, or you got a place to stay tonight? Because I'm, you know, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I just live like a mile up the waterway if you want to pitch a tent, or we got a spare room.
Yeah.
Like, when they hear, they can, you know, that people are still doing these grand adventures. You know,
we love stories, and then they can become a part of that story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just their little... And it's, as well, it goes beyond that, where now they're going into work. So you never believe what happened to you this weekend.
Yes.
So there's this guy. No, really. He started, you know, like in Seattle.
Yeah.
And he's paddling all the way down to Miami. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, and they're like, no. Yeah, look, here's a picture of me with him. And, you know.
100%. And now, after having done that trip and been shown so much grace from people, I sort of feel indebted.
Mm-hmm.
There's been times when Mandy and I have seen a cyclist. You know, they've got the saddlebags. And I was like, oh, where are you going? Oh, I'm riding across the country. Oh, do you want to camp in our yard tonight? Or what? You know, if I see a hitchhiker, I'll pick them up. Whereas I might not have done that before, but doing that trip, it really made me feel indebted to humanity in a way, because we were shown so much grace that I feel compelled to pay it forward, I guess.
Yeah. And now you hear about, like, river angels.
Uh-huh. Right.
And trail angels?
Trail angels, on the Appalachian Trail.
They'll be sitting there waiting, and as people come by, they just open up the back of their van or whatever, and there's all these snacks and drinks, and here, dude, you need some power bars and
right,
that sort of deal. And it's just like, so these are the people that maybe don't have the ability to take 2 months off and do one of these big trips or something like that.
Yes.
But this is their way of getting into those kind of adventures.
Right. And you know, you can view it as a sort of charity, but I view it as, like you said, they're part of your story. They're invested in it. It makes them feel a part of it. It's a charitable thing, but I just think it allows them to sort of become part of that story. Like you said, they take pictures and stuff, and now they can show it to their friends and stuff. Like, I'm not the one paddling, but I'm a part of this story.
And other people that we've talked to that have done big things like this. I mean, even Derek, he was doing the trails and stuff like that and bagging peaks and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about that sort of thing. And that's exactly it. Now you got somebody that's done the Mississippi. Oh, yeah, in this town, we ran into a river angel. And in this town, we ran into... So if they, you know, if it comes out in a book or something like that, they get mentioned. So now they take that book and go, that was me.
It just
lives on, right? Yes. It just gives them some pride.
Yeah, there's definitely people mentioned in our book. Some of them I didn't get their last name, but I hope one day they trip across the book and like, oh, yeah, I'm the one that gave him those perforated old button shells in Bellevue, Iowa, or whatever,
right.
certain trinkets and souvenirs and stuff that we were given. But, I will say it was also amazing to me the number of people that we talked to on the Mississippi that told us one day.
Yeah.
One day I'm going to do that. One day when the kids are grown. One day when the house is paid off. One day when I'm retired. And I think there's a huge danger in that.
One day never comes.
One day never comes, man. One day never comes.
I know in my industry, there's sort of the older guys and the younger guys. And as the younger guys keep coming up, the older guys retire.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things that you've heard them say, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to do this, they all don't do the this and that that they talked about, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, our big, we have a couple of bucket list things we'd love to do. I mean, in the paddling podcast world here, we talk about all these different places around the world. And, oh, I'd love to do that, I'd love to do that, I'd love to do that. And hopefully at some point, we actually, there's no way we're doing it all.
No.
It'd be nice to have your pick and get to do some of this stuff.
Yeah, you can't possibly do it all, but I think a lot of people have, like you said, you've got this huge bucket list, and you can kind of get paralyzed by looking at this list and feeling like, oh, I don't know where to start with this.
Yeah.
Like, so for our Mississippi River trip, we had to build the boat before we did the trip, you know, and I could have looked at the to-do list and been freaked out and not done it, but, I just remember looking at it as... I just need to do something today. So the first thing I did was I actually built a model of the boat just so I could kind of visualize it.
Right.
Built a model of the boat. Okay, that's done. Next thing I need to do is procure some lumber and a place that I can set it up. And so I was at the time when I built that boat, I was doing a 2-year apprenticeship in a traditional boatyard. So we were building lobster boats, working on sailboats. And they were all traditionally built wooden boats. So I built this boat nights and weekends in my instructor's garage. The guy who was the head of the apprentice shop, which is where I went, he let me build it in his garage. But there were days when it felt like I didn't really get that much done. You know, I'd eat dinner, go over there at like 6:30, maybe stay over there till 9:30, and I'd get one plank cut out, or I'd get half the plank steamed and fastened on or something. But it was just these little bite-sized things. You know, you can move a mountain if you do it, even if you do it one pebble at a time. If you just keep moving those pebbles over, you're going to move the whole mountain. And so I do think there's a danger in people saying, well, one day this thing just feels too big for me to tackle right now. You can tackle the biggest thing in the world, and you can start today if you just do the one, you know, make your to-do list. Get one thing. It doesn't have to be checked off. Just get one thing on that list started, and that momentum feeds it. And you'll end up doing the thing that you set out to do.
It's all the start.
Start.
Just start.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, when you're talking about this journey, you got the boat, building the boat as the beginning of the journey.
Right.
Then your original down to New Orleans, and then with your kids. Like, you got three parts of this journey over many years. Mm. This one journey started with starting to build that boat.
Right.
Started with that, making that little model.
Right.
You know, as I say, it starts with the idea.
It does, yeah.
And then makes the model, then makes the big boat, then does the big trip, and then finishes the trip.
Yeah.
And that's quite the adventure right there.
It was. And it breaks my heart, the number of people that never get past the idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's they have the idea, and the model doesn't even get built.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that breaks
my
heart. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Because there's so many good ideas out there.
Yeah. Sounds like you've got a few.
I've got more than a few. So, the name of your book?
The name of the book is Crooked Old River. Rowing Toward Redemption on the Mississippi.
And where can people get it?
Well, it's on Amazon, and it's at my website, trapperhaskins.com, TrapperHaskins.com. I'm on social media at Trapper Haskins, but the book is available at my website or on Amazon. Again, it's Crooked Old River, Rowing Toward Redemption on the Mississippi by Trapper Haskins.
Sounds like an awesome book.
Yeah, I'll get you a copy.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Great.
Thanks for being on, man.
Honored. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
You too.
So that was the chit-chat I had with Trapper Haskins about going down the Mississippi. It's pretty cool how, like I say, broke it down sort of. You can look at it as one single journey, but realistically there was the journey of building the boat.
Yeah.
Then doing the headwaters to the Mississippi in the canoe, just him and his wife, and then down to Louisiana paddling or rowing the boat. And then the 15-year break while he worked, they had kids, and then they finished it
with the kids.
You know, that it's a different take on your
journey. That's a life
journey.
That's
right?
More than just a trip. Yeah. That's a life's journey.
You know, and then people say, oh, I didn't finish the trip, so that's sort of a failure. Well, it's not really a failure. You just because you don't finish the trip right off the bat doesn't mean you can't go finish it. I think people are, you know, there's those people that say, you know, why are people like A to B got to go so fast? Well, why are people going A to B and have to do it all in one go?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing says you can't take a break and then finish it off. So it was nice to talk to Trapper. Was a really nice guy too.
Yeah.
Nice chat with him and getting an insight into the Mississippi and hearing different things about, yeah, you might want to look at this, you might want to look at that sort of thing if you're looking to paddle the Mississippi and, you know, and the things that he needed to learn along the way and whatnot. So, go check out Trapper, check out his book, and pick one of those up. I also sat down
with
Kevin Callan.
No.
I managed to snag him near the end of the day to see how things were going and what he thought of the show, and asked him a unique question, which sort of got a lot of,
What was the question?
Because you'll hear it in the interview. I'd like to ask Cliff Jacobson that question because he's paddled so many places in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was not able to pin Cliff down at all, so I did not ask that question. But here's the interview. You'll hear the question. And like I say, it's not too long of an interview. It's more of a, hey, Kevin, how are things going? How'd you like the show? And that sort of deal. But I've got a question for you. So here's Kevin Callan at the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
What's going on?
Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Oh, that's
right. It's like end of day.
Yes.
I talked to a lot of people.
Yes, you did.
Every time I went to see you, you weren't there. But then I'd be sitting here and I'd see you poke your head around.
I was hiding from you.
That's what I figured.
Yes.
You're trying to see how come I was so popular. People were always sitting in that seat talking to me.
That's right.
Right? Yeah,
I'm speechless.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. How did your show go? Your presentation?
It could have been better.
Oh, really? What happened?
Because they forgot to change on the main thingy outside. The main, who's speaking in the room.
Oh, okay.
They forgot to change it. So people were going in there thinking, dude, that's talking about big boat travel.
There was a lot of people looking for the big boat travel show.
So, no, I had over a dozen people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those little small rooms, right? And very engaging. People participated. They were asking questions. So at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show, my speech lasted like 35 minutes. And here it was like 55 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I only added a couple extra things, but then I had a lot of people talking and asking things and about different, you know, getting out there. And when you are on solo trips, sounds like an awesome idea. What do you do for safety? That sort of stuff. So I said, nothing. Arm wrestle bears, try to ride a moose.
You Canadian.
Right? no, it's been a good day. Met lots of people, a lot of people that we've seen every year. So chit-chatting with them, found some new people out there and chit-chatted with them. And then did some interviews with different people about some trips they've done and water stewardship and whatnot. And yeah, it's been a good day.
Good.
These are always a good day.
Yeah.
And you know what we did? We interviewed Cynthia Donovan.
Oh, really?
The queen of this place.
I know.
We've never had her on.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
It's Derek. I am blaming Derek. So, and you're always selling books.
Yeah, it was a busy day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's standing on the cement floor all day. Wow,
I've been sitting on my butt all day.
I know, you have a chair.
See, yeah. I had, and Kayak Coffee is my neighbor.
How hyper are you right now?
This is the first one I've had all day.
I thought you were there all day getting coffee.
I was trying to, but the lineup. People like Kayak Coffee. Huh? Kayak Coffee from Indiana. Yeah, it's actually quite good. There's dark roast. Just drinking it black.
Yeah.
It's coffee. Good. It's really good.
Good, good.
I like my coffee, so.
Yeah, I just got a chance to walk around. I haven't walked around yet.
And there's lots of people are starting to tear down now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's too late in the day to be.
All the time.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a good day, though?
Yep. I did a Q&A with Cliff and... keep forgetting all the other names. I know them too.
Wait a minute. Would it be Darlene Patterson?
Well, Darlene. Well,
Stacy, yes. Longwell, yeah. Sadowski.
Yeah, Darlene and Stacy. Yeah, I know, yeah. Darlene. Really, yeah. Well. And it was some good questions. It was a slow start. People were like, "Oh, I don't know. I'm a little nervous." And at the end, yeah, I got another one.
We gotta go now. Too late.
Yeah, and we did. We talked about poop a lot.
Okay, as one does.
There's a lot of questions about poop. And then I gave a presentation later on my 10 top canoe routes of my life. And the answer was, I gave 10, but at the end I said, actually, the truth of it is the next one I'm going on, which I don't know what it is.
Is your best one.
Is my best one.
So you know what I'd like to find out from Cliff Jacobson? And maybe I'll ask you the same question here. If you could erase one trip from your brain because you would love to do it again for the first time.
What, because something happened I wanted
to
erase?
No, because it's because it was such a good trip.
Oh, because it was such a good trip.
You would love to experience that great trip again for the first time.
So many. There's so many.
You can't say the next one.
No. my first time in Killarney. Actually, I was in... No, my first time on Lake Superior. Because it's just jaw-dropping.
Oh, you would say Lake Superior with me here, wouldn't you?
Well,
you know Lake Superior and I do not get along.
Well, yeah. Well, there's friction. No, but you imagine the first time on Superior, you're just an awe dropped, right? And then you've gone back and back and back, and you don't get used to the beauty, but the first time I saw the white quartzite hills of Killarney, driving that road, I was in high school, and just seeing it, I was like, wow, that's incredible. And very first time I saw a moose in Algonquin, caught a brook trout. All those things I want to go back in time and relive, right? Actually, on the Spey River in Scotland, I presented...
Oh, you would only erase that from your brain because of all the scotch you drank. I'm surprised you remember half of it.
It's funny, you know, I was telling people, like, yes, I got paid to go down the River Spey and taste whiskey, but I never got inebriated until the last night because the distillery came into our camp.
Oh, your campsite, right?
Yeah, and they started from what moonshine is to actually their most expensive scotch. And I was like a kid in a candy shop.
Right? It's glorious.
My life is hell. It's
terrible. I know. And that's what I'm saying. You need these sponsors to just... We need an airline sponsor. Can you help us out?
Yeah.
If we get an airline sponsor, Kevin, you're coming with us wherever we go.
I'm not going in an airplane right now.
Chicken?
I am chicken.
Just think of all the leg room and elbow room you'd have.
Yeah. Right. I'll walk.
We're going to Tibet? I'm walking. I'll see you there.
Yeah.
There's going to be this little paddle spot in between.
And the Shelburne River in Nova Scotia. I talked about that because Tent Dwellers, that book Tent Dwellers.
Right.
So we retraced that. And I'd do that in a heartbeat, that trip. That was an amazing trip. The Chiniquichi Sturgeon River Loop is one of my favorite. I think I've done that loop more than any other trip over and over and over.
So basically what I'm getting from this is you'd love to have your memory completely erased all the way back to your age of 15 and just redo everything again.
Not everything.
Most of it. The trips. Most of the trips.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Except for the bad bits.
Yeah. Oh, I actually have no regrets from any of the trips I've done, to be quite honest. I've learned from them.
Yeah.
There was some less exciting, more bugs. But I think I would do every single one again and again, to be quite honest. And I've done a lot of trips. The also doing something fresh too, like the Lake Kipawa in Quebec. Christine and I did that with the dogs last year.
Yeah.
We're going back again. Like that was an incredible place.
Yeah, you find new stuff. And as time goes on, there's more opportunities because new places, like Point Grandin, you know, we went there, it was just open. What's this place? Now, like people, oh, have you been to Point Grandin yet?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I have. Yes. And I'm going to go back, right? Yeah, that's pretty cool is that you get all these new things. But yeah, that's just one thing because we're talking about Cliff Jacobson sort of doing his farewell tour this year from all the shows, right? And the places that he's paddled and stuff like that, I'm just trying to think, if he could go back and do one of those again, have his memory erased of that complete trip just to do it again for the first time.
I wonder what that would be. I'm guessing Northern Saskatchewan or maybe even Northwest Territories. Or yeah. maybe his marriage in the canyon.
Any number of them, right?
Yeah. Any number of marriages?
Hey.
Never mind.
He's been married 72 times every year. No, yeah, it could be any one of those trips that he'd just want to, I'd love to do that again.
Yeah.
And that's the problem is you do a really cool trip, but if you do it again, it's not going to be the same.
Never be the
right?
same.
Because, oh yeah, when we were here last time, we went to run that rapid, and we're not going to run that rapid this time because, you know, George almost bit it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I want to see George almost bite it in the rapids.
Yeah, you don't want to live in the past. You want to learn from the past.
Yeah, yeah. But like I say, just do it again without the knowledge of having done it before.
Oh, you think about that. I did the Mississinabe River solo from Mississinabe, the town of,
yep.
to the bay, and I was a kid. I think I was mid-20s,
right?
Maybe. And I don't know how I got down there without drowning. Like I knew how to run rapids, so I wouldn't have done it whatever, but they did it solo as well. And
yeah,
but the sense of not fear but sort of learning skill set,
yeah,
for the very first time and being very proud of yourself, feeling good about yourself.
I can't believe I didn't die in that one.
Well, there was one rapid I was looking for the portage, couldn't find it, and then I ran this whole, I think it was double shoot, and I ran the whole thing realizing that I missed the portage. And of course I'm thinking, Kevin, you're an idiot. But then I'm thinking, well, I ran the rapid, so it can't be that bad.
This is the first year in 100 years you've been able to run that rapid, and you picked the right year, my friend. Because next year, no problems. Yeah. There's so many trips out there that people do that you're just like, oh, that'd be cool to do that. And that's part of the... So ask your opinion on this. With all the technology and the information you can get on different routes, you can go onto Facebook and all these different groups and say, okay, I'm going from here to here. What can you get everybody tell me? And they basically map out every inch for you if you want. Do you think that takes away from all the adventure of the olden days? In the olden days, I mean like the 80s and 90s.
That's a good question. It does and it doesn't. I mean, I wish I had the information back in the day when I was starting to write. I mean, I literally had to get information from each district of the MNR, mm-hmm. and I have to write them an actual letter, and then...
You mean on paper?
On paper.
With pen?
Yes.
And a typewriter?
Well, I did typewriter, actually. And then I would wait for a response, and then they would send me a pamphlet for that route, and then I would do the trip. So we're talking, like, it took forever to do any planning. And then you got MyCCR came up to be. Remember,
right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
That, I lived off that MyCCR. Like, every lunch hour, I would be going to my desk and going over canoe routes, and everybody else around me would, too. And then you had other websites as well.
Algonquin Adventures. That was a big one where I first got into all this.
Yeah, and Ottertooth.com.
Ottertooth, yep.
Yep. And, I mean, they're still around. Still people use them.
Yep.
But then people started doing blogs about their trips, and that's how you would find information.
Yep.
And at the same time, though, guidebooks, you would think that nobody would buy guidebooks anymore, but heck, I'm almost sold out today. So it still works either way.
Well, I mean, Hap Wilson does his guidebooks, you know, of Tomogamy and stuff, and it's nice to see the hand-drawn pictures and stuff in yours and his books and showing, you know, oh okay, there's that. You got to watch out here, got to watch out there. And these are the nice routes and, you know, point A to point B sort of thing and whatnot. It's nice to see that. But in these days and times, there's so much information being given out there. It's, I guess you could argue whether it's actually an adventure or not.
Yeah,
besides the, you know, the old, the adventure is what you make it.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah. But it takes away a bit, right?
Sorry, there's someone more important than me. Here, are you singing? Okay, oh. Ask me one more question because you got a really good guest coming up.
She saw your face and she ran and.
Oh, you guys are going to love this. Ask them California Dreaming or Boundary Waters Dreaming. Ask them to sing that song.
Boundary Waters Dreaming?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
It's an excellent
new
song.
One?
Yeah. Yeah.
Brand spanking new?
Spanking. Yes.
Spanking new.
Yes.
Brand spanking new.
Yes. So, yes, to conclude, was it better in the old days and not? I don't know. I do not like going back in time. So I learned from it. But here they are. Here they are.
All okay. Right. Well, thanks, Kevin.
I'm out of here.
I'm glad you had a good day. I'm glad you enjoyed the Quiet Adventure Symposium 2025, the 30th year.
Yes, and there's a hook around my neck. I got to go.
Bye.
So that was Kevin Callan.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting question, though. That just popped into my head while we were driving down. And said,
oh, okay.
That'd be a cool question to ask Cliff. If he could go back in time, if he could erase one trip from his mind just so that he could do it again for the first time,
mm-hmm.
What river, what lake, what trip would he erase from his memory?
It's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Get different. Yeah.
And, of course, Kevin picks, well, this river, no, that river, no, that river, no, that river, no, that. And as I said, it's like his, what's your favorite trip? The next one. Well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
That's not an answer.
Well, he gets asked that so much. Yeah. I think it's just a protective mechanism.
A trip to the liquor store to get my next bottle of scotch.
But if you get asked that, you know what?
It gets to a point.
People ask him that question all the time. I think it's a protective mechanism. It's like, I'm just going to say my next trip because it's too hard to, like, I'm going to be asked this next time and next year I'm going to have a different answer. Next year after that, I'm going to have a different answer. Yeah. So, but yeah, which one could you erase to do it again? That's fascinating. Good question.
Yeah. So we have the tradition at the Quiet Adventure Symposium
mm-hmm.
that as everybody is sitting there tearing down at the end of the day, Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson come over, they sit in the booth, have a little chat, and they play one of their tunes. And as I said, you'll hear me say in the interview is, it's like Nero playing when Rome is burning.
Yeah.
You guys are playing while everything's being torn down around us. It's been that way for a few years now. Yeah. It's just like they come at the end of the day, they sit down and start playing, and then everybody starts, it's like they're signaling the end. This is the end. So this is a little chit-chat and a song by Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson.
All right, as is tradition.
Yeah.
For some reason, tradition started somewhere. Closing out the show, Jerry Vandiver.
That's me.
Caitlin Evanson.
Hello.
Yeah.
How have you guys been enjoying the show?
Groovy.
Groovy, man. Just groovy.
Everything's groovy.
Everything's groovy. We're playing the late hours with Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson.
It's glad you 23 degrees.
Groovy.
It's 23 degrees. Up next is Phil with the weather and the sports. And if anybody wants to hire me as a DJ at the radio station.
Yeah, you got the chops.
He does.
Yeah, you know. I give up the prestige of doing what I'm doing. Nah.
And leave all this.
One day, all this will be yours. It'll be packed up in the corner of my garage, but it will be yours.
Then you'll have to take it, control it.
So have you guys been doing any paddling this summer? Or last summer, I guess.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, well, summer's not here yet. But that's okay.
But last summer, what'd you do?
Yeah, I went to the Boundary Waters once again.
Okay.
And we did a little bit of local down the river, the Harpeth River in Middle Tennessee, where we're from is good. And that's about it, actually. I didn't get out a lot because I've been actually heavily involved in wildlife rescue.
as I know,
yeah,
Mr. So Fox.
That has taken up a lot of my time and efforts, yeah. But it's done with gladness. I'm glad to be part of it.
Yeah, and what's the place you do the work with?
There's
give them a shout out.
It's called Walden's Puddle.
Right.
And another one is called Harmony Wildlife.
Okay, they're I know both, Walden's Puddle.
Yeah, they're both in the same Middle Tennessee area. And I'm kind of the fox whisperer of Middle Tennessee now.
Well, he all is. The pictures, right?
Yeah.
That's so yeah. nice to see those yeah. those photos, especially uh-huh. the release photos.
We're doing a release this coming Monday evening.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be up. Yeah. I'll post it up on Facebook.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. What about you?
Well, I was just practicing my NPR voice, all things considered. what have I been up to lately? I put a new record out on Spotify. It's
excellent.
Called Never My Fault. And now, if you can believe it, I was asked to be Lainey Wilson in a tribute band, and I'm going to put a wig on and learn how to talk like her and make sure that my accent is perfect. And make sure that I can sing all her songs. I am actually a fan of her music, so I'm looking forward to being a part of it. And get on the road. And also, I'm going to be doing actual Caitlin Evanson solo shows aboard cruise ships soon, which I'm looking forward
really?
To, because I used to be in house bands for cruise ships. So it was really fun. But I'm glad that we were able to make this one work. I love now, this one and Canucopia as
yeah.
well.
And we did just play the Bluebird Cafe as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I know it, right? Ever yeah. since we've been there, like, it's funny because when we went down there, when we stopped and saw you, we went to the Bluebird. And it's like, now I can go, okay, I know the layout of this place.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is there, that's over there. That's
yeah.
Over. That's pretty cool.
It is cool to have that
yeah.
perspective, yeah.
Right? And seeing the whole Nashville. See, I mean, you took us on an awesome tour.
Yeah.
I mean, Tracy and I still talk about
aww.
That. And it's like, yeah. It's great. And she says hello, by the way.
Good.
Right?
Hello back.
Unfortunately, she couldn't come down. She's
yeah.
doing the work thing and babysitting the dog thing and the cats thing. And
adulting.
Yeah.
Yes.
That adulting life is just... what about this coming year? Any big trips? If you're going on a cruise ship, that doesn't
yeah,
really count as a paddling
yeah.
trip.
Actually, I'm going to Ottawa and Sealy's Bay at the end of March.
Are you really now?
Yes. Yeah, you know, James Rappin.
Yes.
He's doing a program on March the 30th called The Accidental Canadian, which is his life story. And he's going to feature all kinds of great, kind of a tribute to his life and exploration and things he's done. And one of the songs he's doing is one that he and I wrote called We Are the Bear.
Okay.
And so I'm going up there just for the fun of it and be a part of it.
All yeah. that way just to sing one song.
I'm actually not even going to sing it. I'm just going to be in the audience watching and enjoying it. Yep.
You got to like that.
You know what? Because I love Canadians and Canada.
You know what? So do I. What a coincidence.
Oh, Canada.
Yeah.
Our home and native land. Theirs is better than ours, by the way.
I didn't hear any booing.
No, that's good.
Of course not.
Of course not.
You know what? And of course, you can't really get away from all of it, but we talked about it and said, if we stayed home
yeah.
every time there was some sort of political, religious, or like gender identity issue, we would never leave the
yeah.
house.
You'd right? be in your house
24/7. Yeah, down yeah. the basement in the bunker. Yeah, so... So you guys are singing, you're playing music,
yeah.
you're having a great time.
We are.
Everybody's around here starting to tear down just like every
just like
other year.
Every year we do. Yeah,
so everything's groovy.
We should call this like the Nero Symphony, because you know how Nero played
and everything burned
while
down?
Everything burned?
That's good.
Right?
I like it. I like it.
They're all tearing down
yep.
and we're
yep.
still playing.
And the Titanic violinist who's like going down with the ship playing.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Just less water here. So this is awesome. Oh, we got. So if you guys want to, what are you going to play?
We're gonna do a song about a guy. We're gonna do a song that she and I wrote, Caitlin and I wrote, about a guy who tried to get a Boundary Waters permit and he couldn't do it.
That covers a lot of people.
It does, including me. I don't have a permit
really?
This year because I missed the permit day. So this is kind of an autobiography, really.
Alrighty.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us hear
and
it.
As you will see in just a moment, your perspective is entirely, perfectly accurate. Ready?
Alrighty.
All the wood is stacked.
All the wood is stacked.
By the fire grate.
By the fire grate.
And the tarp is up.
And the tarp is up.
Just in case it rains.
Just in case it rains.
But it's my imagination.
My imagination.
Not the real place.
Not the real place.
Boundary waters dreaming.
Boundary waters dreaming.
On such a winter's day. I stopped into the park just after permit day. Well, I got down on my knees.
Got down on my knees.
And I began to beg.
I began to beg.
You know the ranger likes the system.
Ranger likes the system.
She knows I'll go away.
Knows I'll go away.
Boundary waters dreaming.
Boundary waters dreaming.
On such a winter's
day.
By the fire grate.
By the fire grate.
And the tarp is
and
up.
The tarp is up.
Just in case it rains.
Just in case it rains.
If I had a hot temp.
I had a hot temp.
I'd be gone today.
I'd be gone today.
Boundary waters dreaming.
Boundary waters dreaming.
On such a Wednesday.
Boundary waters.
Such a winter's day.
Boundary waters dreaming. Such a winter's day.
Wow. I can name that song on one note.
You can, actually.
I'm
impressed.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
me.
You almost killed the punchline, man. You're like, oh, yeah. That sounds familiar.
Oh, that sounds familiar. I know that note.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's an awesome one. Yeah, the trying to get permits to places is becoming
yeah.
an issue.
Yeah.
We've been talking
in
about
Canada
it.
Canada as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Especially the stuff closer to the cities.
Yeah,
right?
Like Algonquin.
Yeah. And they're trying to get away from the... you're booking, I want this week.
Right.
So I'm going to book the 2 weeks beforehand
yep,
as
yep,
well.
Yep.
And then,
yep.
you know, and then you
problems
can't get
all
it.
Over the
it,
place.
It does. And
yeah.
then, so we actually talked about opening day for Boundary Waters permits. And then we're also talking about the Grand Canyon. Like, if you want a Grand Canyon permit for next
it.
Year,
forget it.
You're applying this year.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's like they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
yeah.
but, you
it's
know,
worse than Taylor Swift tickets.
Oh, no, I got some. You want some?
Tickets, who
you
needs
must
tickets?
Have bought those in an alley.
Tickets, yeah.
yeah. I don't know. The guy had one eye and a hook hand. I mean, I'll take what I can get.
Oh, my gosh.
That's an awesome song.
Thank you.
Awesome.
We had
awesome.
A lot of fun working
glad
it out.
We wrote it.
Yeah.
You just didn't come up with it.
It was such a hit, you recognized it before we even started.
Well, what happens so often is whenever we get song ideas, we immediately call each other. And I was walking the dogs one time, and I saw a limb had fallen down on a vacant lot, and I thought, that would sure look good in a campfire. And I thought, okay, I'm Boundary Waters dreaming. I go, whoops. I called Kate, and I said, okay, I got it.
There's a song.
Yeah.
Right? There's a song in there
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Excellent. You got any new albums coming out soon?
We do not. Well, this is a different time and era for recording and putting out product
mm-hmm.
in terms of the cost,
yeah.
in terms of what medium we're going to put it on. And so we have some new songs, obviously, that one and a few others and stuff. But I'm not ready to yet commit yet until I can know that it's going to be out there and not cost us an arm and a leg to do it,
just
quite honestly.
Arm?
Just an arm would probably do it. Yeah.
An arm or a leg, not both.
One or the other. Yeah.
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 Yeah. You know what? Like, I, as much as I hate it, I think the CDs are going the way of the dodo and stuff. I prefer to have that album in my
hands. Oh, I'm the same way.
You know,
I'm the same
even way. Like my laptop.
Yeah.
There's no CD thing in my laptop.
They say Gen Xers are the most angry of all the generations. And you know why? It's because we had to go from vinyl to cassette. I'm sorry, vinyl to ADA to cassette to CD to prescription. Yeah. To subscription.
Yeah.
And to nothing. So that's why we're pissed all the time.
I can remember living out in Saskatchewan and going down the dirt roads. My dad, you had an 8-track. Is that dating me?
Yes.
Roger Whitaker on 8-track. Same with my grandpa.
Oh, Roger Whitaker. He was the whistler, wasn't he? No, who's the whistling? No, Roger Whitaker.
Oh, I know who you're thinking of, and my senior cells are not coming up with the name right now.
But he used to whistle a lot. In his life. But my dad used to listen to Roger Whitaker, Marty Robbins.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, so.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso.
Oh, that song is so good.
It's a great song.
I fell in love with a Mexican girl.
I wish I would have written that.
Yeah. Just
remind
me of the day. Anyway, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. And, we love the tradition of closing out the show with you. And
all you people come back up and go home. We're not done yet. Oh, wait, they did. Who's turning the lights off?
And thanks to all your listeners for all the support of Paddling Adventures Radio. It's a great, great enterprise.
If you are online, go and find Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson and download their stuff and listen to it over and over
and over
and over and over again.
Yeah.
And this is Dr. Johnny Fever signing off from the Midnight Hour.
Thank you. This is Caitlin. Still 23 degrees. Considered.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson, our traditional show enders in our booth.
Yes.
Playing Boundary Waters Dreamin'.
And it was a new song. Like, I wasn't there for the interview, but I did see them play this on Kevin Callan's video.
Yeah, he did a video of the Quiet Adventure Symposium,
and
they played this one on there, so... Good song.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciate them coming through and playing for us the end of every show. They hit all the big shows as well and play music to all these different outdoors, paddling, camping, nature songs. And they always seem to have something different and do a little, but something different. Just to toot my own horn, so to speak, at the end there, I was talking to Caitlin because in this song, she plays a recorder.
Yes.
We all had to take recorder in school when we were little. Grade 5, I learned Mary Had a Little Lamb. I learned Hot Cross Buns and Star Wars. So I played a little bit of Star Wars there to show her, I still reckon it. It's not top notch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be joining any orchestras soon, but I can still play Star Wars.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. And that is it. Those were all three episodes now.
It was weird recording and discussing because there's a couple times where I'm like, wait, are we recording right now as we discuss this? Or is this a mid-discussion event? Because it's like, and I remember looking over, it's like, are we recording right now?
I hope so.
But this was really good material.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. So, and it's weird that, like I say, next year you better be there to pitch in. Yep. And I shouldn't say you should be there.
Pitch in.
Like I said, pitch in. If you're not there next year, you're never there again.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go grab somebody that owns a rabbit.
Yes.
And you're in. Yeah, hopefully things go better next year. You actually get out there with us. It shouldn't be a problem, but you'll have we always have a great time there, no matter
what. Oh, it's a blast. It's nice being down there, and it's just meeting the people and being out there on the floor. And yes, I may abandon you at times and go wander around while you're stuck in the booth, but it's one of my favorite shows. Just the way it's done. The rabbits help a lot too, but it's just a very... It's not so business-like. It's just a lot of fun, a lot of laid back, relaxed. Yep.
They do a really good job.
Yeah.
Really good job putting this thing together. And 30 years now.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been there for 30 years, but yeah.
I've been going 7 years now.
Yeah, incredible, eh?
And we've been recording, I think, 5 years now.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Good times had by all.
Yeah.
So next year, keep your eyes open for the Quiet Adventures Symposium. It will be 3 years.
Yeah.
Since you've been there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've run out of parents, so next year I won't have an excuse.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, life gets in the way sometimes,
exactly.
And you got to deal with it and move on. Good time had by all. We'll definitely see everybody there next year for the 31st year. Record more people, have more fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Drive down with Kevin Callan. And, oh, so on that note.
You guys talk too much.
One final thing. I've come to the conclusion I don't talk more than him, and he doesn't talk more than me.
No.
I think if we sat somebody in the back seat and they each had a stopwatch in their hand, when Kevin talks, they click it. When he stops, they click it. When I start, they click it. A different one. So at the end of the day, you just compare the two stopwatches.
Yeah.
I think they'll be pretty much dead even.
Yes. For an 8-hour drive, each of you says talk 12 hours.
Right? Yeah. It's 6 hours there, and we talked for 12 hours.
Each.
Each. We can get 24 hours worth of talking into 6 hours, because that's how good we are.
Yes, yes.
Again, thanks to everybody that helped put this show on. Thanks for everybody that came by and chit-chatted for a few minutes, all our listeners and supporters, that sort of thing. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. As we always say, that will never get old.
Nope.
Any final comments?
None.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.